All right, we're here on April 26, 2011. I'm up here at the garage with Pop, and we just learned within the past, 2 weeks now? A couple weeks? That he's been nominated for the 2012 class of the Hall of Fame, NASCAR Hall of Fame. We already are in the International Motorsports Hall of Fame in Talladega, and we wanted to get his own words about his thoughts on that. How did you hear you were nominated?
I think someone called me and told me we were nominated.
Yeah.
Before I heard it on the I was listening to it when they were announcing it. That's where it happened.
So you heard it as they were announcing it on the television?
Yeah, on TV.
Oh.
What's that? Comes on at 7 o'clock. On speed, the hub, I think I heard.
Okay. What was your thoughts when you heard your name up there?
Well, it kind of surprised me. Bud him and Pearson kept telling me that I was going to be nominated, but till you hear it, you don't never know.
Yep. And I'm sure that brought a sense of pride and accomplishment to you. I mean, have you had time to reflect on it and whatnot?
Well, yeah, I kind of feel like that. You know, there's a lot more that came along that's not here anymore. That people need to remember that, because I go way back and I know right now that a lot of people don't realize, you know, how long it's been since I even raced back in the late 40s and early 50s. That's good many years ago, you know.
You know, you talk about that. I guess one of the arguments that might be made out there is that a lot of your success occurred before the term NASCAR existed. You know, when you were in the modifieds and, you did a lot of your wins and whatnot before technically NASCAR was even formed, right?
Well, before they were even had any strength. They were actually formed in 48, and I think they run this first race in 49, mm-hmm. and most of my wins came in 1950.
Yeah.
So NASCAR was on the verge of just growing at that point.
Right. Who were some of those people you thought that you mentioned just then that might deserve recognition that you think have kind of been perhaps forgotten as time's moved on?
Well, you had the ones that really started me and Bud into it that came in to our shop in 1946, come into where we were working and wanted a bid put on their race car. That was Gober Soulsby and Bob Ozeki. And they had been somewhere and raced and tore the car up, and we worked overnight, put them another body back on that Ford, and they went out on Saturday and here in Spartanburg and won the race.
Yeah, and that's when you decided you could do it.
Well, we said, you know, there ain't nothing to that racing. We can do that.
Yeah,
yeah. how wrong I was.
Your friendship with Bud and David seems to have been rekindled of late. They've obviously really supported you, it sounds like, here. I know that means a lot.
It does, because Bud and myself actually knew each other before World War II, and then of course Pearson was a lot younger than either one of us, and so he came along 5-6 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you think your chances are this first year of getting in?
Well, you just don't never know whether that many on the line that can remember that far back and know some of the things that we accomplished. You know, like run the Daytonas on the beach there. See, there are only three of us that actually won races on the beach that's still a living, which is Paul Goldsmith and myself. And
who's the other one?
Paul Goldsmith and myself.
Just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
Hmm.
And plenty that raced on the beach.
Right.
Is still a living, but they didn't win races.
Right.
They didn't win the beach, let's put it that way.
Right. Well, you you and Pearson won the championship in 66. How did that season go? Were y'all the dominant car that season, or?
Oh yeah, we beat Richard. We won 15 and Richard won 8. So we beat him that bad as far as wins.
Yeah.
And then first of 67 we split up and that put the quietness on us.
Yeah.
As far as he didn't race that much and neither did I.
Yeah. 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 Richard Petty was the chief competition in 66.
That's right. And then after Pearson was self-split, he didn't have any competition.
I see. When you were voted one of NASCAR's 50 greatest drivers in 1998, I think that was. I remember looking at that poster with the drivers' pictures on it, and I think we marked, what did we mark? 13 drivers that had raced for you at some point. I think it was something of that of the top 50.
It could,
which I thought was a pretty staggering number there.
Yes, because actually I think I've counted here a while back. I've had over 30 different drivers drive my cars one time or another.
Yeah.
That was because I would begin getting out of it, yeah. Yet I wanted to stay in racing, but my depth perception was fading fast.
Right. And you've always talked about Pearson's talent as a driver. I don't think we've ever shied away from saying that. Who else did you think was very good?
Oh, I had a lot of good ones. In fact, yeah. I had so many that they actually proved themselves as winners, like A.J. Foyt, Mario Andretti drove for me. I had another Indianapolis winner, was people don't even remember, was Dick Rathman. He won back in the 60, early 60s, and I carried a Pontiac, I believe it must have been a 61 Pontiac or somewhere in that year neighborhood, to Trenton, New Jersey, and he ran fourth for me. Really had an axle bearing going out in the right rear wheel, which could have held him back some,
right.
Because we didn't get but just a few miles from the racetrack and it froze up and I had to fix it before we could tow it home.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of drivers. One I guess that people don't ever remember was Ralph Earnhardt, Dale's dad, who was a champion sportsman driver. Sportsman was just with one single carburetor, where modified was, two or three or whatever you wanted to put on it.
Right.
Ralph was, he won a championship there. He drove for me on several occasions. They just asked me to let him drive, and I they had the ability, I let him do it.
Right. Was Ralph pretty good?
Ralph was good, yeah. He just was like the rest of us. We actually had to finish that race to make a living because we couldn't make it on what they actually paid.
Yeah. I hear every time I talk to you, I hear new names of people that, people that you think, that that were instrumental in your career and racing back in those days, and people that. That time seems to be moving past, and perhaps they're forgotten. You talk about Joe Littlejohn a lot. You think he was a very influential promoter, right?
He very was, and he was one of the beginnings. People don't realize that that he actually promoted races before World War II, which was at Duncan Park, running those midget race cars around inside Duncan Park, and. Then before the war there, he had Spartanburg that actually raced the bigger cars. And then after the war, he started back and even had our own organization here. In fact, I done forgot the name of what we called ourselves. But we won, our champion was Ed Samples. He got a new Oldsmobile for being the champ. And I think NASCAR paid his champion about $500, so we was way ahead of NASCAR at that time.
Yeah. Well, I know you're excited about the Hall of Fame. We're proud of you. And just to be nominated, I think, is a wonderful honor, whether you get in or first ballot or never. It's an honor to be nominated, and I think it speaks volumes to what you did, particularly being that it's we're talking about a lot of your racing exploits that are, 40 to 50 years ago, I guess, maybe more, you know.
Most of it is back in the 1950s, all up to, yeah. up to the early 60s,
yeah.
when I really, I got out of it, I guess, in 62, pretty near it, but then I came back and drove two more races in 64.
Yeah.
Then that was the end of my career.
Sounds like, and what would you say you're most proud of, just as your career?
I'm proud of that we accomplished what we did. A lot of people can't say what I can say, that I actually built my race cars, which that means I built the motors, I built the transmissions, I built the rear ends, I built it all, and then I actually won races on
them. Hauled it to the track and raced it, right?
That meant a lot.
Yep.
Well, you don't see that anymore, for sure.
No, sir, not a one-man operation.
All right. Well, thank you for talking. And we'll anxious to hear what's said in June, I think, is when they make the first announcement. All right?
That'd be great. If you didn't talk to FJ and FJ and him worked out a deal for us to go to Mobile and race.
Who was FJ?
FJ was my car owner, who owned the Dodge Modified, and Joe Ruck was the chief mechanic on it, who right. built the car. And so we all loaded up and we went to Mobile, Alabama. This is the early part of 1950, and we outrun those guys down there.
What was that racetrack?
It was a half a mile dirt.
Yep.
And wound up, later on, he wanted to get us back down there for a 75 lap on Thanksgiving Day, 1950.
Yeah.
And he kept calling and offering so much money, for us to come. And finally, the money got right, and I told him we'd come. Then I called FJ, and I said, FJ, we got us another deal to go to Mobile. He said, Cotton, I can't go. I said, you and Joe take the car and go on. So wound up, I called Joe. I said, Joe, you ready to go back to Mobile? He said, I can't go, Cotton. He says, you're going to have to get somebody else to go with you. But it wound up that I couldn't get nobody to go with us. So Dot, D.O., which D.O. wasn't but 4 or 5 years old, loaded into that car, towing that race car with the alcohol and the wheels and tires up in it, and Mobile bound.
Yep.
And that was... That was the size of my crew going to Mobile. The one thing about it that people didn't realize, that this car, this modified race car, did not have a flywheel. It didn't have a clutch, no pressure plate, no starter, no battery. It run off of a magneto. And you had to push it off to crank it. And then you knock it up out of gear and warm it up and cut it back off, and then push it off to go racing. And Dot had to do all of that.
Dot pushed you
Dot,
off?
Dot's pushing me around the racetrack. I actually wore him out and brought that U.S. Gulf Coast Championship trophy, the Spartan.
So you won that one too?
I won it by a good margin.
With the crew of your wife and your little boy.
And my boy. 500 miles from home.
Goodness gracious. Well, I know how hard it is to go into somebody's home track and win. What would you say your favorite tracks were? You talk about Charlotte a lot.
Charlotte Fairground, where I actually got involved in the wreck. I love that racetrack. And I say Concord. I had more success at Concord for the amount of races I actually ran, I suppose, than anywhere else. Bruton Smith used to hold a 100-mile modified racer every year.
Yeah.
And I won it three times out of four. and was leading the fourth one and lost a kingpin in the left front wheel.
How big of a track was that?
It was a half mile dirt.
And Charlotte was 3/4 mile, right?
Well, one of them was. We had two racetracks in Charlotte. You had one around the fairground, which was a half a mile. Then on the, the southeast side of Charlotte, you had the 3/4 mile that was right there off 85.
And y'all would do that. You would travel up 29, right? Because I-85 didn't exist at that point.
85 did not exist. You travel on 29. Hmm. And the racetrack was between the old 29 and the new 85.
And y'all would come back that night after the race, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, how long, what time would you get back in?
Well, a lot of times it'd be midnight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the race would get over, it'd get over 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And
yeah. Hmm. That's some good stories.
62.
Junior Johnson.
We went to Atlanta, Georgia. Well, to start with, A.J. Fort was going to run the car. And we went to Atlanta, and A.J. qualified about fourth or fifth, and I qualified about sixth or seventh, and it rained the race out. So therefore, we didn't get to run. And so when we came back, Fort called and said he couldn't make it. He had to run an Indianapolis car somewhere or another. And so Junior Johnson called and let me drive that car. And I said, all right, come on, meet us in Atlanta. So I met him in Atlanta, and we're out there practicing. I'm driving the car Ford was driving, and Junior had the car I was supposed to drive. And wound up, I'm running right at the track record. And Junior was pretty upset because he was about a second slow. And kept saying, you got the better engine. You got the better engine. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll go out there and qualify and come in. We just swap engines because I said, I build them both. I ain't no particular one which I can drive. So I went out there and set a track record.
Where was this at?
It's in Atlanta, Georgia, 1962.
Yeah.
And wound up, come in there and change that engine. That's when we took a whole Wednesday afternoon to qualify. You could qualify anytime on Wednesday afternoon you wanted to.
Hmm.
So come in, swapped the engine. He went back out there and run the same identical thing he'd been running. Yeah. I went back out there with his engine after I got it running and continued to run as fast as I'd been running. He said, what's the deal? I said, your chassis. The chassis you got there is eating your horsepower up, you know, and it's all one thing, the chassis is horsepower along with the engine.
Yes.
So I learned him that the chassis was just as good as the motor. And so many people don't even realize that to this day.
Yeah.
That the chassis is just as important as any part of the race car.
Yep. Yep. How did getting involved with our four-cylinder racing? What did that mean to you? Did you enjoy it as much as we did?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed it because anytime you build a car and you go out there, where it don't matter what it is, and you win with it, you're proud. It makes you feel good.
Yeah. And I've always gotten the impression over the years as we did that you were very much at home, you know, at the dirt tracks late at night as we were out there, and you know, you always seem comfortable there, and you know, maybe even more so than at the big time tracks where you may have been late in the NASCAR career, you know, that's where you were meant to be, so to speak, as opposed to you know, whether racing today would even be fun for you.
Well, you know, there's so many people right now wonder why, you know, the wasn't better racing back in those years, and the problem was, and I don't care who you talk to, whether they know this or not, the problem was you had to manufacture the pieces that you race with, because I call them candy stores they got now. They go out and buy any piece of that race car they want to buy. You didn't do that back in the 40s and 50s. You had to go to the wrecking yard and get that piece, or whatever
and then modify it.
Yeah, and whatever you needed to modify it to run. And we had these racetracks that with no equipment to prepare those racetracks. People don't realize that how important shock absorbers are, and until Monroe come into racing, we only had one or two people that actually made a racing shock absorber, and Monroe got in it and really put handling into our race cars.
Right.
In fact, I won the very first race for Monroe Shock Absorber Company at Richmond, Virginia in 1950. I had to be in, 59, I believe. Could have been, had to be 59. Because I was driving a 59 T-Bird at Run Daytona that I bought off of John Holman through a deal that people helped me buy.
And that's when they introduced their product about that time?
They sent me a set of Monroe shock absorbers, and that racetrack got real chattery, and them other shock absorbers give out, and I just run around it like it's on a piece of ice.
Hmm.
And so many people don't realize too that the Darlington was the first paved racetrack we raced on. Now they had a little old track at Bowman Gray Stadium. It was around a football field, but it wasn't for stock car racing. It was foot racing.
Hmm.
But yet we started running some racetrack, some modifieds up there, and the sportsmen.
Hmm.
So it just that the equipment that they took to build the racetracks with was just important as running a racetrack.
You talked about Atlanta. Is the track that you talk about at Atlanta, is the current track where it was even then? Is it
the racetrack in Atlanta, Georgia, is still there that we built in 1960, because I supposed to won the first race there, but I actually got paid for second.
Yeah.
Wound up, you had another racetrack there in Atlanta, was a 1 mile dirt racetrack. And I raced the modifieds there long time.
Yeah.
Didn't win but one Grand National race.
Joe Eubanks.
And he won at my car. He raced for Bud for years. But I don't advertise that.
What race was that he won?
Hillsborough. In 1958. I lost the Vale. I was leading the race, but I lost the Vale.
And he was driving one of your cars.
He was driving my 57 Pony 8 that I sold that run third to Daytona in 59. I ran fourth.
Yeah.
The car I sold run third and I run fourth.
Yep. And you said you quit in what, 62?
62, I drove my last
race. So you raced, race. Did you race at Daytona, what, the 59, 60, 61, and 62?
I set fast time in 1959 at 143 miles an hour. Then I set on the pole in 1960. But I was the fastest car in 59, but I didn't get there in time to qualify for the pole position.
Right. But in 60, you were on the pole.
I was on the pole.
What happened in that race?
Broke an axle.
Didn't finish?
I didn't finish.
What happened in 61 and 62? Do you remember?
I don't remember. One race, it could have been July the 4th race, Junior Johnson finished second in my car. I let him drive it. Because, when I was beginning to get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't remember what I done in February.
What would you say, so as far as your greatest wins, the 57 Beach Race, is that number one?
It's one of them.
The Gulf Coast Championship sounds like it means a lot to you.
Gulf Coast means a whole lot because it was me by myself with Dot pushing me off.
Right. And then I guess Southern 500 and 70?
Well, the two modified... The two modified races in 53 and 54 at Daytona when they outrun over 100 cars in each race.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good to say that, you know, you outrun the best of the field, because there's from all over the United States there.
Yep. Yep. And then the four-cylinder championship at Gaffney in 1995, that's got to be right up there with those.
Oh, yeah. it definitely the modified fours with running with you and Kyle and Ryan. Yep. They won a whole lot of races in their modified fours.
Yep, yep. Well, they always knew we were there. That's the motto we've always tried to... At least they always knew we were there.
That's exactly right.
We were a factor.
And we weren't trying to take advantage of nobody. We were just trying to beat them in our smartness.
Yep, yep. Yeah. Pop, they talked about some of the people, Hall of Fame nominees. I've seen some articles written. They talk about some of the guys that have passed on. Raymond Parks died last year. Fireball Roberts. I mean, those are some pretty big names and worthy names, I think. I don't know. You know, it sounds like a lot of those guys, and there's also some guys who are still currently managing teams and whatnot that are there.
Yeah. I mean, that's what burns me up. If you still participate in a sport, how can you be nominated for the Hall of Fame when you participate? When the fame, I thought, was what you had accomplished before time. Mm-hmm. And his accomplishment, and if you still participating, you not have finished your accomplishment. You know, that's what irks me so bad, that you got people like Marshall Tigg, for instance, won two beach races on the beach and good modified driver, and got killed trying to run 180 mile an hour at Daytona in 1959. And then you got Gober Soldby and Bob Ozicki. And Ozicki, he built the car that did go and run 180 mile an hour. Gober Soldby won the beach race. And those guys, very seldom even get mentioned.
Are there other names you think belong on there that besides those?
Oh, definitely. You got guys that you know you very seldom ever heard of.